This was a friendship test. All of you fail.
This is a pressure cooker, not a crock pot.
Hey there, Shopper Maniacs! You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer. Chris!
Oh, a pun eluded you this week, Dave.
I've just been struggling and thinking about my personal brand and wondering if it needs a refresh, you know? You ever get those feelings?
I think you're probably particularly jealous because your company just rolled one out, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. We did a little refresh of the website. It was fun. I got to go down a huge old rabbit hole with like color cycling animation with Canvas. And yeah. I post on my blog, but it was
hopefully we'll
fun.
Get to talk about that in a minute. I would like to get into that, but we'll talk about the why and how briefly. That's a bunch about what we're going to talk about today. We have a special guest on the show, one of my favorite designers in the world and people, really, Dan Mall. Hey, Dan.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. So maybe a quick intro of like your place in the world a little bit. How do you like professionally? How do you make money and do your
life? Yep. I make design things for people. I do that under an agency moniker called Super Friendly. I live in Philly. I'm married. I have two kids. All of Yay. My things are great.
The elevator pitch. Love it.
There it is.
I love the elevator pitch for you. Let's hear it.
I like it. It's good.
So you design things for money. That's a thing that people can do in this world, but are kind of a voice in the world of talking about design. Maybe just that's your nature, or maybe you find value in it, or who knows why. I couldn't tell you why I do it, but I do to some degree. And have recently written, maybe not even for the first time, but certainly it's come out recently, about the idea of portfolios, and which I guess like is a part of a larger whole, which is like getting a job. How do you get a dang job being a designer? You know, like what are the challenges people face and all that? So like, why are you thinking about it? Did you get asked for advice a lot? Is that kind of the deal?
So it's something that I talk about with my apprentices every day. So I run an apprenticeship, and with Super Friendly, I don't hire people at the end of the apprenticeship. So Super Friendly is just going to continue to be me forever if I can help it. And so with my apprentices, I have a 9-month program where the end of that program is for them to get a job somewhere else. And so we talk about it all the time, like how do they as designers and developers actually go and get a job? And part of my job, I think my responsibility to them is to help increase the odds of that. So like, how can they better get a job? And I think the way that people get a job right now is like, you know, they like collect a bunch of stuff that they've made over, you know, over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And they usually spend like a weekend or like a holiday or something, you know, a day putting it together. And then they just sort of like Hail Mary it out. Like, I don't know, I hope somebody will throw me $60,000 a year. You know, or what, however much.
Sure. I would think even like brick and mortar schools do that kind of thing, help you get one of these together. And any kind of program is going to want you to end with a portfolio. Because, I think if those of us who've done some hiring, you'd be surprised. Even that, that's a table stakes, right? Like if you don't have one, it's kind of like, who am I even talking to here? And if you do a good job with it, they're probably not wrong. Like having a portfolio with some effort into it that's a good start.
No, it's cool because it's a double-edged sword, right? It's like, that's what we measure how good somebody is or how qualified they are to do the job that we're hiring them to do. It's like, it doesn't matter what degrees they have. It doesn't matter. And I think that's cool. That's great. Like anyone, that makes it so that anyone can sort of enter our field. So it's like, you don't need degrees. You don't need certifications. If you have something that says, yeah, you can do the work, you know, that's what namely a portfolio is. But then the other side of that is like, all the variables have to be right. Like the timing has to be right for the company that you're applying to. You have to have the right stuff to be able to show them. So it's almost like this, combination of luck and skill, and you just don't know which one you're dialing up. So I wrote the article to basically say, like, I think there's a couple of ways to increase the odds, you know, so it's not just a Hail Mary every time. And so that's what the piece was about.
Yeah. It's such a tricky balance, isn't it? Because you could have, you could put together like a pretty good portfolio and send it to 10 companies and they all say no, and then your analysis from that is this industry is rough, it's a terrible time for hiring, et cetera, et cetera. But really, you could have just hit bad luck on all 10 of those or whatever, or you could have had stiff competition, or maybe that portfolio that you thought was so good maybe wasn't as good as it could have been. And so what, let's say that happened to you. I don't know. I'm trying to tee this up for you, I guess, a little bit, because your article is like, let's maybe not just make a good portfolio, but what's your message?
Yeah, so let's make a tailored one, right? So like, okay, so look, I got both good and bad feedback, both positive and negative feedback about the ideas that I was sharing in the article. So like, let's start with one that I think maybe most people would agree with, which is that there's probably a right season to apply and a wrong season to apply to a job. Like applying for a job in the U.S., in like November, where Thanksgiving's about to roll around and Christmas and the holidays are about to roll around, probably not a great time to apply for things. And
because you're at the end of budgets.
Yeah, like exactly.
All of that.
I might be the person trying to do some hiring, but I just don't feel like dealing with that right now because I'm trying to wrap up some bows on some other stuff. Like, I don't want to too much right now.
Exactly. You're going on vacation. Your kids are out of school. Like you're just not focused on, let me ramp somebody up and then go away for 2 or 3 weeks on holiday vacation, you know, because then it just feels like the wrong timing. So where's a good time to apply? Probably January, you know, when people are getting back to work. And like, so that might be a better season for applying. And so I think that that's one of the variables. But the variable that we often don't think about is the one that's like, well, what are the things that the company wants to see? Right, and those things are actually pretty evident to us. You know, if I'm trying to apply at Airbnb, I can look at all the designers and developers that have gotten hired at Airbnb. Like, what do they have in common? I can look at the work that they've done. I can look at what Airbnb makes. Like, if they make apps and I show them a portfolio full of websites, I'm probably not going to get a job there because it doesn't say that I can do the job that they're asking me to do. And so I think that those are things that designers and developers don't think about when they make portfolios. They just think about it as like, well, this is my archive. This is what I've worked on. Mm-hmm. And it might not be the right work for the position that you're trying to get. And like what I see a lot of people doing is write themselves off to go, well, I don't make apps, so I guess I can't apply there. Like, well, make an app then, you know, like make a fake one, make one for your bank or make one like that's fine.
Some of this is asking developers here, please do a little bit more work.
Yeah. Well, because so this always seems silly to me. It's like you put something together in a weekend and then you're asking somebody to pay you, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So like the investment, it just seems odd. It just seems like misplaced. Like, you know, let's say I make $100 an hour. Let's say I bill hourly and I spend a weekend, I spent 16 hours, you know, 2 days, 2 8-hour days. That's $1,600 that I've just invested in order to get $80,000 in return. You tell me where I can invest $1,600 to get an $80,000 return. I will do that investment any day. And yet that's how we treat our job.
I got a guy, Edward Jones. He could probably help you with that.
Hello, Eddie.
This podcast is brought to you by Edward Jones.
So the gist in, again, is take a portfolio and craft it for the job that you're looking for. Like, can you walk through what that looks like even in more detail?
Yeah, totally. Actually, just an hour ago, I was working on this with one of my apprentices. So he's looking at an agency that he wants to apply at, and he's a developer. So he's like, all right, well, what kind of portfolio do I make? I'm like, all right, well, let's go through that agency's work. And let's find out what they do. Like, so we're just looking through the source code and going, okay, 9 out of the 10 sites that we just looked at are built on WordPress. Okay, so maybe you should have some WordPress chops. Maybe you should show them that you can build something on WordPress. You know, half of the work that we looked through was built with Angular. So it's like, okay, do you know Angular? Because what we're trying to do is say, we're trying to make it so that you, when you apply there, it feels like you already could just get a job there today and you'd be able to hit the ground running. So if they look at your portfolio or they look at your work and they go, oh, but you don't know Angular and half of the work that we do here is Angular, all they're looking at is the distance for, you know, oh, well, we got to train you. That's going to take 6 months. So instead, if you could make it like, oh, I could work there starting tomorrow and I'd be able to hit the ground running. So we're looking through that agency's work and going, how do they write their CSS? Do they do object-oriented CSS or do they do BEM or do they, like, what do they do? And let's show them that you can do that. And then in the thing that you're trying to build right now, build it that way. Build it as like, look, I'm going to build it as if the agency built it this way, you know. And so you're just kind of creating that alignment between those two things. And one of the questions that he asked, which was a good one, which was like, well, okay, so they do things using BEM. Well, my last project wasn't BEM. Should I go and redo that project? I'm like, well, no, that like because that would take a lot of time. So instead, the new project that you're working on, build that with BEM so that you can say, look, I built this one with BEM, but I also can do this other way and this other way and this other thing. So it's really just trying to nail the bullseye. Like, what's the bullseye look like for a job there? And even if you get on the board, even if you're not on a bullseye, but you're one of the outer rings, that's still better than nothing. But I think what a lot of people do is they just sort of like shoot an arrow up in the air and like hope for the best, you know. But I think that there are easy ways to make some alignment between the job that you're trying to get and the work that you're putting in to get that job.
I think that's an awesome. I think it also has, you know, I'm right now, like for a client, before this call, even, you know, doing competitive analysis, like looking at, competitors and figuring out, okay, what's their tech stack? What are they, you know, what third party services are they using? What's kind of, like you, not only does like doing this little investigative journey on what a potential agency is using, you're learning a skill to like how to dig up, I guess, dirt. I don't know.
Right.
Intelligence. We'll call it intelligence, customer intelligence or something. You're learning how to like build up intelligence and like kind of figure out how things are put together, and that's going to help you, right? Like that's a good, I guess, task or rabbit hole to go down, it seems like.
I mean, I haven't hired, you know, at Super Friendly, I don't hire people at least on a full-time basis, but when I was hiring at the last agency I worked at, man, I would look so favorably on that. You know, if somebody took the time to like do their research and like say, hey, I found this thing out about you and I listened to these podcasts and I saw this person at a conference and I read up on this. I'm like, man, you could work here today. Like you could, let's just start you off with a computer. Let's just give you a computer right now and let's do mm-hmm. it. But I think, you know, in a hiring position, I think that one of the things that a lot of people look at is like, well, what's the distance in getting you ramped up? You know, if you got to learn this thing, am I looking at a year before you're able to start? And I think that's the thing that dissuades people from hiring someone is going like, all right, well, now the hiring manager has to invest in you as much as you're investing. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing, but it is something that dissuades some people. You know, I'm not talking about what this should ideally look like. I'm talking about what this pragmatically looks like to actually get a job in, you know, in the current situation today.
So I have a question. Or a counterpoint, I don't know. Sometimes hiring managers, though, are so disconnected from the product or even reality. I don't know. So how does that kind of factor in? I mean, you're still, I guess, qualified, but like how, like if you smell that this hiring manager is kind of just cruising LinkedIn, what do you sort of do there?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a tough one. And this is like certainly a privileged answer. I'll start with the privileged answer and then kind of walk it back a bit. The privileged answer is like, then you have a choice to make. If you can sniff out that the hiring manager is just like, doesn't know what they're talking about. Is that a company that you want?
Oh, I heard you do Java. And it's like,
right.
Well, JavaScript.
Right. But, exactly.
Yeah.
So is that a place that you want to work? Right. Because that means that you might not be able to work in a good situation. Now, some people have the ability to say, yeah, I don't want to choose that. I choose something else. And some people don't. You know, some people have that less so. But I think that what I'm trying to do with the article is say, eyes wide open on both sides. You know, part of what I wanted to do in writing the article is say, yes, person who is applying for a job, here's what that could look like. But also, psst, hiring manager, this is what you should be doing. Like, give your person the answer. Like, it's one of the things I love most about the web is it's like the biggest open book test. Like, when we do work, we can look up anything we want. You know, we can Google, we can Stack Overflow, mm-hmm. I feel like hiring should be that way too. If you want to hire a good candidate, give them the answers. Like, make it easy for them to give you a good answer. So, partly what I want from this article is like, I want a hiring manager to read this and go, oh, that's the way that we should be looking for applicants. Oh, because if we do it this way, then applicants would be able to say, oh, if we know that you're looking for a person that does this tech stack or this, you know, can design with this app or whatever, then like, it's sort of like help them cheat, like help them get the right answer for you, because right. It's a win-win.
It'll help you weed out the bad ones too. If you're worried about this giving you more applicants, you're probably wrong. It'll probably get you less and better ones. Because, I mean, just following simple instructions is apparently, it's just incredible. It feels like you put out a call for jobs and half the people don't do what you ask them to do. You're like, oh my God, good luck.
I tweeted the other day, I just bought an Instant Pot, which is like a pressure cooker and slow cooker. So I tweeted the other day, like, I just bought an Instant Pot. I want a really simple, like, throw ingredients in the pot, you know, walk away and then come back to a meal,
mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like crockpot style. And it's surprising how many people sent me crockpot recipes. You know, it's like, well, all right, that's not what I was asking for, but somebody saw the word crockpot in it.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's very similar. It is.
You're like, this was a friendship test. Yeah. All of you failed.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a pressure cooker, not a crockpot.
But I agree. Like, just following those simple instructions is like, some people just won't do it, you know, and some people don't have that attention to detail.
So that's kind of the first line of defense, right? Like read the job posting, actually, because not just the job title, and then like kind of figure out like, here's maybe a question. What if, you know, you read the job listing and, you know, you got like 6 out of 10 on the requirements. What do I do? Do I just walk away or do I carpe diem and just go for it?
Yeah, one of the things that that I love about my apprenticeship is it gives me an excuse to like bring other people in and to talk to my apprentices. And I have a friend, Jason Prohaska. He's the general manager of an agency in New York called Media Monks. And so he came in to talk to my apprentices one day, and he gave just such great advice. He said, like, here's the way that you apply for a job. Like, here's the three things that you go and you tell them. One is you tell them what you love doing. Like, you tell them what you are just super excited to do and you do really well. And the second thing is you tell them what you could knock out of the park with your eyes closed. And then the third thing you tell them is what you don't know how to do, but what you would love to be doing. You know, and I feel like that addresses that gap. It's like, I would love to build Angular apps. I don't know how to do that, but every Angular app I see is just killer. And I would love to be able to do that. So over the next year, I'd love to be able to learn how to do that here. Like that takes some work away from the hiring manager. Like, you just created your own growth path. You just created your own career trajectory. So they could be like, all right, well, if you want to learn Angular here over the next year, cool. Now there's situations where they might say, well, we need an Angular person right now. And in that case, you aren't qualified. And I think that's like, that's an unpopular, but a common truth sometimes. Sometimes you're not qualified for the job. And it's up to that person, that hiring manager, as to whether how much tolerance they have for you not being prepared for that job. So ideally, what you do is you address 10 out of 10.
Yeah, my perspective on hiring is that most people aren't. Like, it's a little adversarial almost. I wish it wasn't. But sometimes it's like, I know there's a lot of people that want this job. I need the perfect person. I don't want to screw this up, because screwing this up is screwing up my company. And I can't have that.
So. Especially when you're small, though, right? Like, yep. I mean, like, you have a staff of 6.
Yeah, so I don't want to be tricked into it. I want to look at your good portfolio, because your good portfolio is going to tell me, I can just tell you go the extra mile kind of person, and I want to go the extra mile kind of person. But I don't want to feel tricked into it either. I don't want to feel like, oh, your resume is more amazing than you are, but there's probably not that many examples of that, so...
And I love the dialogue that's happening in our industry about this too. Is like, we are talking a lot more about management and about like, here's how you hire people, is that you be gracious about the stuff that they can't do yet, right? And you have tolerance for that kind of stuff, right? Like, the more we look for perfect people, it's the same thing as always trying to ship the perfect product. We'll never be able to do it. And so the more dialogue we have about like, you know, let's add some grace, some graciousness for, you know, people can't do this, but if you could see them getting there in a year, that's still a good hire, you know, and I think that we need to be talking about that stuff more.
Well, listen up. If you're one of those people that are like, hey, you know what, I'd like to put, I have a lack of things to put in my portfolio. Well, we can talk about that in a moment, and we have a kind of an interesting opportunity perhaps for you to dig your teeth into something like that potentially. So stay tuned for that. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by An Event Apart. Just Google that or go to aneventapart.com. It's a conference series which goes to a bunch of big cities all across the United States. There's two conferences coming up this year still. Orlando, October 8th and 10th, or 8th through 10th, and in San Francisco, December 10th through 12th. But the 2019 dates are out as well, which is very exciting. So if you need to, or if you're planning on, you know, you need a little longer planning period, pick one of these cities: Seattle, Boston, Washington, D.C., Chicago, in Denver, San Francisco. Which city works best for you? Which one's close by? Which one would you like to visit? Which one can you go on vacation with while you're there? They're just amazing shows to go to. As a matter of fact, they kind of pioneered the single track multi-discipline conference event, meaning you all go, you all sit in the same room and watch the same speakers and have the shared experience of watching some of the best speakers in the business talk about all the most important stuff that's happening around web design and development right now. Let's talk about UX and how to design well and how to think about it and accessibility and just all the big topics. You know, it's even kind of a place where topics get broke, you know, that like a speaker comes who's really good and starts talking about it, becomes kind of a major theme in our industry. That type of stuff tends to start and stay at Event Apart, which is great. So the shows are super optimized for the best possible experience. There's great food, there's really good lighting, there's really good projection, there's really good internet, there's really good food, there's good music that plays in between. You know, I know they take special care to make sure the music is great. It's really great. It's different. Nobody designs a better event. That's why they call it an Event Apart, a wonderful community thing. And I've been to a whole bunch of them and love it every time. So maybe I'll see you there next year. Can't wait. AnEventApart.com. Dan, there's an image in your article that kind of shows what, you know, almost in a wireframe-esque kind of way, what one of these portfolios might look like. So if we're saying go the extra mile, put together a tailored portfolio, in your example here, as you're applying for a job at Nike, do you want to describe what that looks like and what?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So it's like a combination between a cover letter and a portfolio, right? So it's basically like introducing the person to me. And there's some context here too, where what I've done even before I put this together is, one, I'm a lifelong Nike fan. I would love to work at Nike. I wear Nikes. I'm going to continue to wear Nikes even more so now, you know. And so what I've done is I've researched, okay, who is the person that I need to be applying for? Like, what team should I be on? Rather than just applying to a general Nike team, well, I want to work, you know, with the retail experience design group, or I want to work with the digital group or whatever. So I've gone and found who that person or who those people might be that I'm applying for. And I'm writing them a letter. So the top of this thing is just kind of like my opening statement. And it's addressed to a person, right? It's like at the top of this portfolio, it says, "Hi, Junichi, who is the senior manager at the retail experience design group." So like I'm writing a thing to a person, not to a company. So I think that's the first thing. It's like, who is that person? And right away, that means that this is not going to work if I try to apply at Spotify too, because the person's going to be different. And so what I often suggest to my apprentices and to anybody making a portfolio is I'm going to have, you know, Nike.danmall.me and Spotify.danmall.me. I'm going to have these live at separate places. And I might have a generic one that lives at a certain place that's more public, but I'm also going to have these kind of variants, these kind of offshoots for specific companies. So that's kind of the first part of it is like I'm writing to a person. And honestly, the more I can find out about that person, the more I can appeal to them. If I find out that they're a sneakerhead, I'm going to tell them how much of a sneakerhead I am. If I find out that they like hiking, I'm going to tell them how much I like hiking too. I'm not going to lie, mm-hmm. right? But I'm just trying to find like, what are the things that we could connect on? Yeah. So that's the first part is just kind of this opening statement. Then the second part is what you would think of as like a normal portfolio. It's like my collection of work, but it's not just the story of the work. So this is the thing that I see so many designers do poorly is they go, I did a redesign for Crayola and it was about increasing the conversion from this percent to this percent. And we did wireframes and we did designs and we did this and we did that. That's the story of the project. But as a hiring manager, I don't care about that. I care about your story on the project. Like you tell me what you learned. Like you tell me what did that project mean to you? Did you do something new there? Did you struggle on something? Like I don't care about the story of the project. I'll go and read that on the agency website. I want your story of the project. So that's the second part of this portfolio. It's like, I know the qualities of the job that they're looking for, and I'm trying to use the same language to mirror that. So in the job description that Nike wrote, they say, well, we want somebody who can, you know, work to bridge business targets and consumer experiences. Okay, so my portfolio piece is going to tell you how I bridged business targets and consumer experiences on this particular project. how did I do that specific thing? And so if it could be the same work from portfolio to portfolio for different companies, but I'm slightly tailoring it to say, what's the thing that they're actually looking for? You know, because what Nike's looking for is a little bit different than what Spotify is looking for, is a little bit different than what Puma's looking for. And so I'm trying to tell the specific story. And then the last piece is like just other stuff about me that is relevant to this job. Like I collect sneakers, you know, I wear them all. Here's a picture of my sneaker collection. You know, like that, even if my portfolio was that, Nike would have slightly more incentive to hire me, a designer who's a sneakerhead, than a designer who's not a sneakerhead, you know? And so I'm trying to say, here's how I already align with this company. And this is like, you know, one person that I was having a conversation with about this on Twitter after I published the article said, well, it's not really a cover letter. It's not really a portfolio. And the closest that we came up with was like, it's almost a proposal, right? This is like, from an agency standpoint, this is the kind of proposal I'd put together for a client. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably the most accurate word for it. It's like, this is a proposal to the person that you want to hire you. Like you're trying to find, appeal to all of the things that is important to them about you being in this job. So yeah, I like thinking about it as like, this is my proposal to that person. And in it is a little bit portfolio. It's a little bit cover letter, but altogether, this is me proposing why I'm good for
this. You might want to take some pieces of it in the email because you got to get them to click on this link. So you can't just be like, you can't send them an email that says, click this link. You'll probably maybe take those first two paragraphs, chuck those in the email and then
Yep, we treat cover letters and portfolios as separate. I'm like, I don't know, just mash them together. Like, yeah, put the cover letter in the email and make it a PDF if you want, but also drop it on top of your work in your portfolio too.
I will say, so Dan Denny, who ran the front-end design conference in St. Petersburg, Florida, he would do this for speakers, like people he's asking to speak, which again, it's kind of this proposal. Like, I would like to ask you to come to my event. And he would just say, you know, what he admires about your work and or like what he thinks, like why he wants you in his show, you know. And I just, it was so flattering, which is probably not the best motivation, but it was like that. It was just so like, just like, oh, he's thought about me. Like, this is an instant yes. Thank you. Like, it wasn't just kind of like a you know, a form mail. Like, you know, I just, that was very, very, like a powerful moment that I still remember, you know, like a customer service moment, you know, it was like, oh, wow, this was very powerful.
And that's what we want from hiring managers, right? It's like, we want instant yes. And I've gotten that email from Dan too. And I'm like, man, this makes me want to speak at his event over everybody else's event because he cares about me. And I think part of that is that it has to be authentic too. It can't be a tactic, right? It can't be a strategy that you're employing. I think it's got to be authentic. Like for me, I wouldn't repurpose this for Puma because I'm just not a Puma enthusiast as much as I'm a Nike enthusiast. So it wouldn't be authentic. And I think that stuff comes across too. But if I'm excited about something and excited about a job position, I want to be as enthused in the email and on the website as I can, because I think, like you said, like you feel that on the other end. You're like, wow, this person did their research. They really want to work here. We want them to work here. And, you know, and after I launched this article, like a bunch of hiring managers said, like, if we ever got an applicant like this, it would be an instant yes. Like we would just hire them right away.
And you're saying hire, but like all I want is like an interview, but you're saying like hire. Like,
oh yeah.
If a hiring, like, there you go.
Yep.
Perhaps that's why you used Comic Sans and called it a wireframe in your article, is that you're not saying here's a template you can use, because that's like, here's now this is just a tactic or a strategy and just grab this and use it. You're saying, just look at the vibe of what I'm doing here and pull that vibe into whatever it is you do. Don't like do exactly this, but like bring your whatever
up. I'm looking at your like layout, you know, I mean, that's what, like 4 hours in Sketch to just get it perfect, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, that's,
I mean, if that, right?
Well, so, hey, yeah, I mean, maybe two, but like, so here's like elephant in the room for me. And it's privilege, right? Like a lot of this, and this goes into like the GitHub portfolios and stuff like that, is, you know, a lot of people, you know, I'm thinking of single parents or, you know, people who have to take care of their parents or, you know, anybody who has like kind of a less, I don't know, free time in their life, you know, doesn't have that privilege of free time to sit around and make fake websites or like one-off websites for people. Like how does that factor into this? Because I think it's kind of a serious issue in the industry. Like if we all expect this, you know, not everyone can do this.
I totally agree with that. I'm glad that you brought that up, because What I don't mean to say by all of this is the way that all portfolios should go, right? Everyone should make a portfolio like this. Every hiring manager should accept and only accept portfolios like this. That's just too dogmatic to be realistic. And I've gotten that same feedback from the article too. It's like people saying like, well, listen, I work paycheck to paycheck. I work multiple jobs. I don't have the free time to be putting into this. And that is totally fair and legit. And I'm not saying like, well, you should, do it.
Tough.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be tough. I'm trying to say, find your version of this. Like, what's the version that you could do? If you have 2 hours of spare time, could you do a 2-hour version of something like this where you are appealing to the person who is in this job?
Even if it's just the email, if it's not a subdomain part of your site, maybe you can just get good at that first email, but it still has the same kind of vibe. It's personal. You talk about, yeah.
Yep, it's that. And I think like what I'm trying to say by this is that it is an investment, and not all people are prepared to make investments at all, all the time. And that's okay. Like, I don't have money to invest in stocks right now. No one holds that against me, but I also shouldn't expect the return that I would get if I did invest in stocks, right? The reward that I would get is proportional to the amount of investment that I put in. So if you're not prepared to make the investment, that's fine. Maybe you could get yourself into a place to do that. And I've got specific thoughts about that too, so we can talk about
it. You're going to be versus people that do have the time though. So it is tricky, this is just one of the sucky penalties that you're going to incur by being in that situation. And it's not, maybe it's not fair, but it's just unfortunate really. But
I'm a firm believer in the fact that there's a version that you can do. There's an hour version, there's a 30-minute version, there's a 4-week version. When I worked at Big Spaceship, a person who applied, we did a lot of work for Wrigley, right, the candy company. And with this person that applied just sent in a gift box with all of Wrigley's candy. Like, here's a Snickers bar, or Starburst, and Skittles and extra gum and all that stuff. And it was like, wow, they did their research. And that was, probably $20 worth and, an hour trip to the grocery store. Like, it doesn't have to be a big grand gesture. It was their version of saying, look, I'm paying attention. And that was enough to go above and beyond everybody else's portfolios that they sent in. It was just that little extra bit. So I'm not saying that you have to spend 4 weeks on this thing or 4 months on this thing. If you can, great, you increase the odds. But if you can't, I'm sure there's a small version in there that you can.
There's a way to make it look good. And I would particularly avoid the don't have the opening line of your portfolio be like, I'm sorry, this isn't better. Right. I don't have time. That's not going to do you any favors. Just, still have the same vibe.
Don't open on self-deprecation. Self-deprecation is a good thing, but also.
Yeah, it's a version of sorry I haven't blogged lately, oh, great opening line.
Oh, man, this blog post is going to be a zinger. No, I've done it. Guilty.
So I didn't read all the replies to your tweets and stuff, I'm afraid, but I can imagine some of them. Some of them is, bro, I don't even have time. I mean, we just kind of covered this, I guess, but I find it hard enough to get one portfolio together. You're telling me I apply to 4 jobs, I got to do 4 portfolios, or more likely, I actually applied to 80 jobs. So what do you say to the 80 jobs people?
So, and that's the thing that we talk about all the time is like, I think that there are tiers, right? There's like the places that you really want to work at. It's your dream job. I would love to land a job there. Those are the ones to put the investment in. But then there's also, right, if I'm making a portfolio for Nike, I'm going to go all in on that Nike portfolio, whatever my version of all in actually is. But you know what? There's also Nike wannabe companies out there that they're going to respect that kind of portfolio too. So maybe those are the ones, I'm sort of backtracking a little bit from what I said, backpedaling. Maybe there are the ones where you can say, all right, well, this worked for Nike. I'm not as enthused about, other upcoming sneaker company startup, but maybe I can use some pieces of that to make a version, right? I've already got a starter kit for that thing. And there's companies that want to be like Nike that would love someone like you there because you aspire to be at Nike, but you can't be at Nike, and they would take you as a second place gladly, easily. So that's not to say that there's no repurposing of this stuff. You can repurpose it totally, but I think that there are tiers of this. It's like if there's one or two companies that you really want to get into, well, great. Like, put all the effort that you can into those things. The ones that you're like, I would like to get this job. That would be cool. And then and then there's probably a tier that's like, well, I don't know, I need a job, so in the worst case scenario, I would take a job here. But then you're going in eyes wide open to go, I didn't really put a lot into it. I don't really expect a lot out of this thing. If I land this job, okay, but it's like, that it'll just be for making ends meet. And I think that's realistic to where all, you know, where a lot of people are in their lives. It's like, not every company is going to be the dream company. Not everybody, not all the jobs that you're going to land are the dream.
You know, it strikes me, if somebody's really fervently being like, I am not going to do this, this is too much work, I am anti this concept, then okay, fine, but you've kind of placed yourself, as soon as I read those words out of your mouth, I'm like, well, you're just not an extra mile kind of person then. You've just placed yourself in this category of, I don't want to work real hard.
Liabilities? Is that the right word? I don't know. I liked your sentiment, Dan, that it's, you know, like this page that you have on your portfolios post, it's like a 2 hour investment ish, you know, for an 80, you know, 60, 70, 80K job or whatever. I don't know what your market is, but yeah, it's like, it seems worth it to me, you know, to kind of do that research. And then, yeah, if you get an interview, which, you know, seems likely from hiring manager feedback there, but like, if you got an interview, you could maybe like, you go in hot, you know something about the company. You're not just going to like fumble on questions, you know, even the basic ones, like, I don't know. I feel like if you go into a company and you know something about it and you can ask intelligent questions, that's gotta be a way better.
So you're saying, you know, if you've done this, that you're, because the portfolio is just the first step, right? That the interviews come next. And if you've done this, that it's giving you an automatic leg up in the interview process as well. Cause you're going in with more confidence, cause you know what's going on, that kind of thing.
And I know people, I'm blanking on who like wrote the original post, but they'll like keep like spreadsheets of information about like companies they applied to, when they heard back, and when they like, you know, what they know about the company and stuff like that. I think that's a great way to do it too. Like, just like, if you're applying for a job, like treat it like serious, you know, like carve out time for that, you know?
Yep, totally. I think that, especially for designers, like designers are supposed to be able to be good within constraints. So like, I always, you know, I always take it a bit weird when I hear a designer go like, well, I can't do this. And I'm like, all right, that's fine if you can't do this, but like, what can you do? What's the version that you can do? And when the message kind of comes back is like, well, I have no options. I'm like, well, like, I think everybody has options. Yours might just not be as apparent as everyone else's. Like, you might be having more trouble coming up with them because of your circumstance. I think that's legit. And that's, you know, that is the truth for a lot of people. But I don't believe that there are people who have zero options, right? Like that, like those are few and far between. So I agree with you, Chris, that it kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit too. When people are like, I can't do this. All right, well, what can you do? Like, what's the version? There's got to be something. And you as a designer especially, like, you're supposed to be good at this. So, like, you can find 30 minutes somewhere, 15 minutes somewhere, 10 minutes somewhere. You got 10 minutes? Record a voice memo on your phone and send that to your hiring manager. Like, that's something. That's better, you know, than just doing nothing. There's a two-minute version. There's a, like, there are all these versions. And as designers, we're supposed to have the skills to explore all of those versions. What's the MVP of your dream portfolio? You know, like, how do you approach it that way? And I think that if you think about it, you know, it'll be a little bit untraditional, but not traditional, you know, but if you think about it from a different perspective, maybe there's a way in that way.
I think there's some companies trying to convince you that you're just so amazing that companies should beg you to work there. Like, I think of hired.com, but there's other versions that are trying to be like them. And they may have sponsored this podcast in the past. In fact, I have a friend who was very successful with them. So I'm not trying to say, this never works, or it's a joke or a scam or anything. But the deal is, you sign up and you answer a few questions or whatever, and then you just, you know, plop the footrest of your lazy boy up and just wait for those offers to pile in, kind of thing. I don't know what to say about that, other than I can't imagine that you're going to land a job in, you know, generally, that you going after the job you want is probably going to have a higher chance of getting you that kind of dream role than the lazy boy will.
Yeah, I'm of the Dr. Phil, you know, mindset. It's like, well, how is it working for you? You know, like, I have got a lot of people that are like, I don't have time to do this, I can't do this. I have too many design, like, I'm applying to a bunch of jobs and have to do design tests and study for those and do these assignments. I'm like, cool, how's that going? Like, if it's not working, change it. You know, like, I don't know what to say other than that. Like, if that doesn't work, here are some other options that you can try. And it might not be a slam dunk, but is the thing that you're doing.
Yeah, it feels weird to say, like, I don't have time for that because I'm very busy with doing a bunch of stuff that isn't working.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, well, I can see one problem with that.
So not to judge the Dan Mall apprenticeship program, but our Super Friends program, what are you seeing, like, either success rates or something of your apprentices? Like, are they able to get jobs they want, or is it sort of like all down to the person? What is kind of the situation?
I would say sort of half and half, right? So it's certainly down to the person, and I try to tailor it to the person and what they're actually doing, but varied results. So I've had a few that do this exactly. Like, I'm going to do the work. I'm going to spend 9 months building up a body of work. I'm going to handpick a company that I would like to work at. And I'm going to make a portfolio for them. And then I'm going to land a job, and they land a job in 6 days. You know, it's like, well, great. Like, that worked in that scenario. That's not to say that this method is foolproof, right? Because there's the other end of the spectrum where, you know, you do that and it's the wrong timing, or there's some variable that's like, it was like, well, that company's not hiring anymore. And, you know, and they were before when you started putting this together 3 months ago, you know? So, all right. So that sucks. You know, that doesn't work. But then they could take that thing and kind of repurpose it for something else. Because I think it's more about the mindset of this approach. Like, once you think about the approach and go, all right, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find a way in. Like, I'm trying to find, like, where's the chink in the armor, or where's the hole that I can kind of, like, you know, widen to be able to get in that no one else is seeing. And I think that mindset is the thing that scales. You know, the other thing that I've seen is a lot of people will aim, a lot of my apprentices will not aim as high, aim a little bit lower to say, well, I'll put together a portfolio that's more standard, but I'll apply for an internship somewhere else, you know, instead, or a junior position instead of a higher position, you know, because the higher the position, the higher the expectation, right? Sure, you get the higher salary with that too, but now your portfolio has to be that much better in order to land that job. So I think it sort of varies in that way in terms of success. It's like, some apprentices have come out of here and said, well, listen, I don't have the capacity to be able to, you know, spend 4 months on my portfolio. I can put together something more generic, but maybe I'll go and apply for a junior position somewhere or an internship position somewhere. And they've been successfully landing those.
That's interesting. Okay, now flipping the table, Chris, as somebody who hires, like, if a Dan Mall super friend shows up with a decent, I don't know, decent portfolio, let's assume decent, but it's probably been QA'd by Dan, so it's probably great. But but like, decent portfolio, decent, you know, kind of body of work, like, does that stand out to you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's definitely a lot more yes than no. You know, sometimes, you know, I don't know, just maybe as like a little bit of a skeptical person, sometimes I'm like, it's like they want it so badly that not that I have any inclination of not giving it to them, but I'm just like, oh, it's so eager. It's like, I almost like feel bad. Like, if we don't go with them, it's going to make the saying no harder or something. I'm going to be like, oh, this is going to be the hardest person to disappoint ever. But I guess that's what they want. They don't want you to say no. So they're making it hard to say no. Right? Yeah.
They're making it hard to say no.
I also,
it's like the person who emails you and says, I really loved your blog post on totally random blog post. Perhaps you can link to my blog.
Right. <Is it? laughs> Right.
But Dan, you've said you've seen it, not like you've not only put these portfolios together, but seen people get hired from them. So it's not, this isn't just out of nowhere. Like, this seems like a good idea. Like, no, this is a thing that actually works.
Well, so let me play it out with you, Chris. I'm curious about this now. So you, as a person who hire, let's say one of my apprentices wanted to work at CodePen. Here's how I would coach them. And I'm curious just to know, like, if they put together something like this, how would you respond to it? So what I would say, just like, and you and I haven't talked about this, I don't know what CodePen's requirements are for developers or anything, but I would say a couple of general things. So one is, I would say, maybe your whole portfolio should be CodePen. Like, maybe it shouldn't be a separate site. Maybe all of your work should be in CodePen's. And then I would say, well, maybe try and find, like, maybe your portfolio, the story of you, should be told through the lens of CodePen. All of your work samples are there. They get to see your code samples. Mm-hmm. You curate collections of things that you admire and want to be able to do someday. Maybe you have some collection, whether it's on CodePen or maybe it's using the blogging tools, of like your favorite talks or shop talk show episodes or podcast episodes that Chris has been on or something like that, to say, hey, I picked up this thing from here. Here's a code pen that I did that to help me practice this concept. So if it was just, if it was that, how would you, like, well, first, have you gotten a portfolio like that? And secondly, like, how would you react to something like that?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I think it would be just the fact that you've, you know, done some work on CodePen and showing me samples on CodePen, big, big props for that. Because I don't want somebody that's totally unfamiliar with CodePen. So for sure, I want you to know what the platform is, that you've used it and have it. Like, if you apply for a job and you don't even have a free CodePen account, I'd be like, that's just weird, you know? Like, I don't know. So at least have an account, and probably have an account that's fleshed out, like that you have an avatar uploaded and you've made a pen or two and have clearly explored the product a bit would be nice. And then the fact that not only have they gone that far, but they've put a bunch of actual work samples on it, I think that would only be good. There's no necessarily negative there. I've seen people do that and apply, which was cool and definitely like made it to final round stuff. I don't think we hired the one I'm currently thinking of. But then like there's almost like one step too far for me, which is here's a sample of how I would redesign CodePen in a way that was kind of like, I like the thinking here, but it's so strong-willed that now I'm worried about that, like, if you're hired, that this is what you want to do. This isn't just like an idea. This is like, no, I'm a super CodePen user and I'm trying to get this job so I can fix CodePen for me, kind of thing. And I'd be like, maybe that's not the case, but it kind of worried me that it was, that they were like so invested in it that it was almost strange.
Well, from a dynamic standpoint, it sounds like that crossed over from being portfolio proposal to a pitch. Right, it's like, yeah, here's the product that I want to build, and you're saying yes or no to that product, essentially. So I totally agree that like there's some things that kind of cross the line and go, oh, well, now you're not saying yes or no to hiring that person. You're saying yes or no to hiring that person to do that specific thing now. Like it added this new variable to the equation that, you know, that maybe made you think twice.
Yeah, I've seen it cross the line into weird. That's my only trepidation to this at all. And I think it's reasonably easy to just apply some personal taste and have that not happen, and everything is fine. You know?
Anecdotally, I will say I like people 100% more if they listen to Shop Talk versus non-Shop Talk show listeners. I meet people at conferences. One person will say, I listen. I'm like, I like you, don't like you. And it's pretty easy to kind of split, you know, A-B test.
And I, you know, another consideration is if I'm hiring a developer, that like I do look for, like, it's nice if it's clear that you've worked on a big app before, especially if you're hiring somebody like mid-level or senior, that's like, you know how to take care of an app and have worked on a big code base before, not just little experiments. And CodePen isn't really built for building and maintaining a big app. So if 100% of everything you've done that you show me is CodePens, I can get some sense of your, like, what kind of languages you know and your aptitude for certain things, but not, it's hard to get a sense of all you are as a developer. So I'd probably want to see a little bit more than just stuff on CodePen.
So that, I think that's an interesting nuance here that, like, I didn't talk about in the article at all, which is like, the position that you're applying for, I think, needs to say something different in your portfolio. It's like, I feel like there's a spectrum of, if you're applying for a junior position, the expectation that the company would have is that they would be giving you a lot, right? Like, they're paying you, but also you would be learning a lot from them. But if you're applying for a creative director job, it flips, where it's like the company should be taking a lot from you. Like, they should be learning, everybody else at the company should be learning a lot from you. You know, like you just said, if you're a senior developer, you should have maybe worked on a large app before, and that the rest of the CodePen team could maybe learn some stuff from you and that experience that you've had. Whereas if you're applying for like intern developer, maybe the expectation is not that you would lend that knowledge to the company, or you would give that knowledge to the company. So I think there is this sliding scale of like what your portfolio needs to say, tailored to what position you're applying for and what tenureship you're applying for to.
I think what I was maybe getting at, yeah, yes to all that, but the one way that your like Nike thing might backfire, maybe, is just that I've seen this happen at other companies too. Like, you want to work for WordPress and they're hiring for a particular role, but what you picture of as working for them isn't really what they're hiring for. Like, let's say what Nike is hiring, they need a developer, but they need a developer for like their intranet news system. And now you've sent them a portfolio that has a big high-res photo of your shoe collection and how much you care about Nike shoes, they're like, this guy's not going to be happy working on this internet. This guy wants to design landing pages for shoes. And I get that. And I want to give him a like, but we have those. We're not hiring for that role. We have good designers that do that. So we're going to get him at Nike and he's going to be a shoehead and he's going to leave this role in 2 months. Cause what we're asking him to do is build this like dashboard for shipping or something. That's just it's not going to interest this designer. I can just tell, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think like in that scenario, I've applied for the wrong job. You know, like I shouldn't land that job because I didn't apply for the right one. Like if I send a picture of sneakers and sneaker landing pages for an internet job, I filled out the wrong application. Like it's almost like, yeah, you know, right. you second guess that receiving that. They're like, did they fill out the wrong
application? Yeah, your portfolio should have been like, if you wanted the job for real, it should have been like, I love building internal dashboards for IE 11. I just love IE 11.
Just love letter to IE 11. That's your custom tailored page.
Or companies that try to get a support job at a company they like because they think, oh, I'll jump from support to development or something. That's pretty common. Like, I'm willing to do support for a while just to get my foot in the door, which is kind of not what companies want sometimes.
I did that. I almost did bug testing at Squaresoft, like Final Fantasy, so I could get into game dev.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Almost went real bad. Well, it just would have been like hours of driving.
This was last year.
Last year I went to Squaresoft and
you know what? I want a timestamp on a podcast that I can send people to answer this question. So I'll let Dan do this. Like, what do you say to this common question of like, I'm just trying to put a portfolio together aside from all the stuff we're talking about, but I don't have anything to put in my portfolio. What do I do?
Ooh, that's a tough one. All right. You don't have anything to put in your portfolio. So the first truth to accept is, no one's going to hire you if you have nothing to put in your portfolio. Like, we live and die by portfolios in this industry. So the second thing is, okay, I don't have anything to put in my portfolio. The next question is, what can I put in my portfolio? So if you're applying to Spotify, make something related to music. Make something, anything. Like, design your dream audio player, you know, design a concert page for your favorite artist. Like, just even if it's tangentially related, like it, even if something that says music, that's better than something that doesn't say music, right? Because if it doesn't say music, then you're asking the hiring manager to make the conceptual leap to go, how would that actually work here?
Are you thinking like kind of dribble style, like, hey, here's an audio app, you know, or I redesigned whatever, probably don't redesign Spotify, but like I like whatever, redesigned Apple Music or something. Is that kind of what you're...
Maybe. I think it depends on the job that you're looking for. So I went through this example with one of my apprentices recently where he wanted to apply at a company. And when we looked at the designers that got hired at that company, what do? They all make dribble style, beautiful, beautiful, polished UI design.
Kind of like micro layouts. Like,
yeah.
I put 3/4 of the browser window up in the left corner and then I put like a background and the iPhone in the right corner.
So if that's the job that you're applying for, yes, do that. Make your portfolio only dribble, you know, at that point. If you're not, though, if you're applying for a company that really values more about thoughtfulness or interactions or the deep thinking behind things, which arguably, you know, lots of stuff on Dribbble is not, then that stuff is not going to work if you put that together for that company. So I think it really depends on where are you applying and what do they value, right? And that's easy to see. Like, another thing that we don't do often, you know, designers, is like, we're supposed to research things to find out. Like, if you want to know what the company wants, call their hiring manager, send an email. Hey, what do you want to see in a portfolio, right? And like, who has tried that? You know, very rarely have people tried that. And then what they get when they try that is, oh, this is what they want to see in a portfolio? Well, great, now I know. At least now I'm not guessing.
You know, you're a step ahead of everyone who exactly was guessing.
And I think that's the point. It's like, it's not that you do this,
it costs you nothing.
You do this and you're guaranteed a job. It's like, how do you just get one leg up, right? That's better than not. So like, these things are really just to give you one, just to increase the odds. It's not a guarantee. Like, none of these are a guarantee, but it's like, how do you just get one step closer? You know, like, you get the
interview. Do you think if you did this for 4 companies and did a good job that your chances of getting in at one of those 4 companies are higher than if you didn't do this and applied to 80 companies?
That would be my bet, yeah.
I bet that too. I absolutely bet that. You know, it just seems like there's, especially at four, you know, if you're just computing, like, if you do this once versus applying to 10 companies, I'd be like, I don't know, 10 companies, that's a lot. And the one, you never know if it's going to pan out. But doing it for four, I think it's one of them is going to be flattered enough that they're going to take you home.
Well, and how many though, like music apps and retail apps and, you know, how many of those do I have to like design kind of, you know, rush job to get this portfolio up? You know, how many of those do I have to do?
You know, my unpopular answer is like, well, how much is it worth it? You know, like
as many as it takes,
huh? You know, as many as you can do without being fed up. Right. There's certainly a point that everybody has. It's like, all right, so this is like the 1600th audio app I've done. Maybe I shouldn't be applying to audio companies. You know, there's that line. I don't know where, I don't know, like, I don't have a number. It's like, well, after 30.
Well, there was a good, like, 4 years where Dribbble was just weather apps. So you gotta like cut yourself some slack. It could be a weather app.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of promised we'd get into an opportunity perhaps for you to flush out your own portfolio. This is fascinating. So as a little backstory, I mean, let me just ruin it first. It's to redesign chopdocshow.com, which is an opportunity that we're excited about because we just, you know, it needs it is the point. So a little minor bit of backstory there is that at one time we hired some intern-like help to clean up the back end of Shop Talk Show such that it has a bunch of really clean data to work with, that we like custom fielded every single podcast episode. So it was very nice data that it has all the meta, you know, has the title and the number and the guests and the sponsors and the show notes and the transcripts and it's all separated into fields. And the idea was that when you do that, I think a designer sometimes, I don't know, salivates a little bit. We're not giving them this terrible constriction of like all this data is just in one big chunk. And so please design a page that's, I don't know, pretty on the outside and then slap this chunk in the middle. It's like, no, you're the sky's the limit here. You can move things around and be as, you know, do exactly what you need to do. And the data will support it in a way. And then that got done. And then I think it was maybe at a time when Dave was like switching to Windows-ish and
or had a kid.
Yeah, it was something. And it's not, I'm not blaming this on Dave. I mean, we couldn't get our dev environments perfectly in sync. So I was just like, let me just slap something together that's just kind of gritty and bleh. And then of course that's the one design that we've sat with for 2 years, maybe on Shop Talk Show or something.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not our best effort. And now that we realize that, you know, this is a priority show for us, but the important part of Shop Talk Show is that we continue to produce it and get it out there. But we'd love for it to have a much more beautiful home, and we'd love some help with that. You know, we can even take care of developing it and putting it together. But what we'd love is, you know, and I think Dan has generously offered to be a part of this in a way, to kind of have somebody else do it, but have Dan kind of shepherd the way. And I think it was even Dan's idea. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So I remember, I think maybe it was on July 4th. I think you said like, hey, it's an anniversary for Shop Talk Show and I'm thinking about this stuff. And I think it was your birthday too, Chris, or something like that. Is that right? Was it your birthday? It wasn't.
No, it's in August, but that's CSS Tricks' birthday.
Ah, so that's right. CSS Tricks. And you sort of mentioned offhand in a blog post somewhere like, yeah, I'd love to redesign it, but whatever, you know? Yeah. And I was like, well, that would be cool because I get a lot out of Shop Talk Show. I listened to it since the beginning and I recommend it to my apprentices and everybody. And so I was like, well, I would love to see that improve too. Like, I would love to see a better site that I could browse or I could send to people. And I've got some ideas as well. And so one thing that we just ended up talking about was like, well, what would it look like? I'm not sure that I could take that on as a full project, but maybe we could work with somebody. And a little bit of this is like putting our money where our mouth is here. Maybe we can work with somebody who needs this portfolio piece. You know, I'm fortunate that I don't need this portfolio piece, but somebody else does. And so part of the things that we were thinking about was like, maybe this is an opportunity for somebody who is underrepresented in this field, that this is an opportunity that they might not be able to get otherwise. Maybe this is somebody who is looking to maybe change careers. So somebody doesn't work full-time as a designer or in tech in general, and like they could use a really great portfolio piece to put in their portfolio to demonstrate to companies, look, I have the skills and the desire to do this. And so we thought this could be an interesting opportunity. So the deal is that Chris and Dave would be clients, you know, here, and also, you know, could develop this, but that we're looking for a designer that I would sort of creative direct and could design shoptalkshow.com. And that person would probably, you know, knowing that, you know, Chris and Dave and I all have, we love doing open projects, or at least semi-open projects. So this person might have to have some tolerance for, you know, we might do some, record some YouTube videos of our conversations and sort of do some of this stuff in the open a little bit. And you know, so that person would have to have some tolerance for that. But we were thinking it could be just kind of an open opportunity for a person who really could use a portfolio piece like this.
And like a real client relationship, right? Like, we're not just going to like, yeah, just send us a finished design and we'll implement it. You know, we're going to have feedback and behave like a real client here and make sure that we get something that we're happy with in a way. And there's some budget for it and there's some process that we expect. And, you know, being under Dan's wing is going to be amazing experience for you and gives us some comfort that it's going to be an amazing design at the end. And so we're hoping that you need this, that you aren't already flush with time and have an amazing portfolio and have an amazing job and just want to do this for funsies. That's cool. And like in another world, maybe that's the thing to do. But we're aiming for this as a little bit of a, can we help somebody out in a way? We want you to, you know, we want to have this person be junior-ish and underrepresented in design and tech and probably not already in their dream job and, you know, and somebody who could, you know, is going to learn from this experience, learn from Dan, learn from us, get some exposure, you know, get a little money, have this be a feather in their cap that they could really use. So there is a URL for this to apply. So we'll put this in the show notes, but please also let's do it on the audio as well here.
Yep. So the URL is shoptalkshow, all one word, all lowercase, shoptalkshow.superfriend.ly. And that'll redirect you over to a Google form that has a handful of questions on there. And I want to run through the questions because I think it's related to what we have just talked about, which is like, sure, we want your name and your email, but there's three questions in here. So one is, what makes you the perfect person to do this redesign? Like, we want to know that. We want to hear from you. This is your cover letter here. We also want to know, like, how is this going to help you break into the field of design, development, tech? Like, how is this going to help you? Like, you know, tell us that you need this so that we know how to tailor this experience to you too. And then the last thing is anything else we should know about you that's relevant to this opportunity. And so note that we didn't say, send us a link to your portfolio because you might not have one. Now, you might not have collected work. If you have one, that's a great place to put it. But also we're sort of looking for like, we're looking for you to say, here's why I need this. Here's why I want this. And whatever means you deem the right thing. So, you know, send us links to stuff that you've done, send us stuff that you like. You know, I'm trying to give you the answer without giving you the answer because I don't know what the answer is. But like, that's the stuff that we want to see. We want to see like, why is this going to be a good thing for you? And that's going to make us want to make it a good thing for you too. So all of us are going to be invested in it. So that, you know, visit that link and you'll be able to apply. And what we'll do is we'll kind of sort through all that stuff after, I don't know, some amount of time. We're still figuring this stuff out too. And you know, and get back to the person that we think is going to be the right one. And then go from there.
Yeah, that sounds great. We really, I mean, and don't, you know, if you think you might be the right person, we want to hear from you too. You know, don't totally self-select yourself out of this. If you have an inkling that you want to do it, go to the URL, fill out the form, and hopefully we'll get to work with you. And we really look forward to it. From my own selfish perspective, I'm just like, ooh, this is going to be great. We're going to get a Dan Mall influenced, beautiful design. And I love Devin Out. Stuff like that. It's like pleasurable. It's like, I feel like these days I work all day. And then my version of video games at night is to like dev out something that's like totally fun. Like a little project like this is like yeah. Pleasurable. I mean, just rock on some CSS and some PHP loops and that's the good stuff.
That's funny. I thought I was the only one that did that.
That's good. That's my dessert these days.
Yeah, I've got the new Spider-Man game just sitting on the side because I've been learning CSS Grid instead.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's fantastic. So I guess we'll leave this there. Thanks very much, everybody.
Yeah, very. Please. If you're interested, or it sounds like an interesting project, hit up that form. Thank you, Dan Mall, so much for coming on the show, teaching us about how to like boost our portfolio. We really appreciate that. For those who are not following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
At Dan Mall on Twitter, also at Super Friendly Co on Twitter, or superfriend.ly to see what I've been up to lately.
And friend of the show, Brad Frost, are kind of sharing your designer developer process. We'll put a link in the show notes. But it's really awesome just to see how you guys work together. I think it's cool and worth checking out because we get a lot of questions about designer developer relations. So thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you and use some of these sweet hacks. Try it out. Let us know how it works. But CodePen job board quality source for jobs and applicants. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Shop.cho.com.